that talk, when, here's what I would say, because we have some questions that came in. I love that talk. Is, as Craig was talking, if there was something, not if, I bet for most of us, as Craig was talking, or any of the things that you hear today, if you find yourself resisting, you know what I'm saying? It's part of it's like, yeah, 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 and then it's like, I don't know, here, can I give you some advice? The thing that you are most tempted to push against is probably the thing you most need to listen to. So when Craig's talking about five services, six services, and you know, BHAGs and all this, if there's something in you that you find internally you begin to push, would you please, because you're a leader, would you please pay attention to that and go, huh, that I resisted that. You need to just put a little mark in your notes besides, I resisted that, boy, when Andy said this, I resisted that. Then you need to go back and ask yourself, why did I resist that? Because that is probably at the epicenter of what you need to process as a leader and what you need to learn. And I'm not saying that to you, I'm saying that to me too, whenever, because I've sat through that talk six times, and the first time, honestly, when, you know, Craig's going through the whole thing about, you know, you think too small and how many services, and Craig could tell you, because we talk about this all the time. There was something to me that's like, yeah, but, and I start doing the very thing he says not to do, and the very thing I tell leaders not to do. Yeah, but in our city, in our culture, our people, our churches, our system, and I start making excuses for the very thing God may want me to pay attention to. So when you find yourself resisting, you need to go, there it is. Okay, I'm not going to resist. I'm going to put a little mark there, and I'm going to go back later and say, okay, God, when Craig said that, I winced, I resisted. Is there something I need to learn there?
Right, and the reason we both make this argument really strongly, I'm always going to say the thing where you want to argue back the most is probably the place where you need a perspective change, mm-hmm. is because we've both done this so many times. The things that I used to say, I would never, and that's stupid, and I can't believe he said that, and like, that's ridiculous. It was like, what it was revealing is I didn't have the perspective yet to even comprehend the why behind what they were saying. And so some of our biggest breakthroughs, yep. as leaders have come on the other side of the things that we resisted the hardest and the most.
Exactly.
And so every time I try to train myself the same thing, every time I'm going to say, well, I disagree, or that would never work, well, in our context, whatever, I always try to stop and say, I wonder what I really need to learn here and what I'm not seeing. And you can have breakthrough moments there.
So the gift of disorientation, is that how you said it? Because
yes.
That's what I wrote down.
Yep.
I love this. Because I'm tempted, like everybody else, to just kind of tweak, make it better. And I'm all for making it better, but to take those giant steps forward. So this year, I've been listening to this talk really for over a year. And so I knew going in this new year, I needed to do something like that. And I'm not making this up, because I've listened to Craig say this over and over and over. And I'm like, you're right. What is it? So you'll be proud of me, Craig. I don't even think I told you. I think I may have mentioned this yesterday. So January, I sat down with our leadership team. I said, okay, this year, we're gonna double engagement at our churches. We're gonna double engagement. Now, we have a very specific definition of engagement. An engaged person is somebody who gives four times a year or more, and a person who's in a small group, these are all adults, 18 years and older, give four times a year or more in a small group and serving, and somebody who is inviting. But let's just take these three. So that's basically, if a person is doing all three of those things, we consider them engaged. So I had, at every campus, I came in with the numbers, the chart, here's our engagement. In a year, we're going to double engagement. And it was, but you know what? We started February the 1st with a number. February the 1st, we have already begun thinking differently, measuring differently, looking at things in a way we would have never looked at before. If I'd come in and said, hey, let's increase engagement by 10% and attendance by, you know, doubling it, when you come in with something that's very disorienting, it forces everybody to sit up straighter. You think differently and you act differently. So I credit you with that. That was
the reason that's so important, as you all know, people are attending church less frequently because of everything going on.
Yep.
And so our philosophy, most of us used to be, if we can engage them on the weekend, then they'll be engaged during the week. Now the philosophy's got to change. We actually have to engage them in doing church-related spiritual activities during the week to even get them interested on the weekend. And so engagement during the week matters. We're doing what we call focusing on the 167. There's 168 hours a week, and we have them for basically 1 hour. We've always focused on the 1 hour. Now we're trying to say, how do we help them take their faith to the 167, which is a different strategy. And the big thing that Andy said here is we're doing something disoriented and something big. There's something specific and there's something measurable. An average plan implemented today with passion is better than the perfect plan implemented 6 months from now. Just get a plan, get something specific, get anything coming. We're going to double the number of people serving in kids. We're going to increase the number of people at off-time services by 20%, whatever. We're working on something together, so we're winning together. Yep. We're moving the ball forward together. If we're just trying to generally build the church, that's general goals don't move people to specific actions. We have to have something specific that we're working on to move the ball forward. Yep. So anyway.
And as big as we are and as successful as we are, it's been a while since we've had it, because again, to your point, and this is so important, I'm not trying to fix something that's broken. I'm not coming into a terrible student ministry saying, you know, we're going to take
the
next generation.
We're moving the ceiling and we're doing what
most people exactly. Otherwise, we're going to keep incremental, which is fine, but that's not our potential. Right. Our potential's bigger than that. So it does take something disoriented.
Let's deal with one or two of their questions.
I don't know. These are good. How can we cultivate an atmosphere of confidence among staff? You talked about that confidence thing, how I'm ugly and my wife's beautiful. So that, I guess that's where that came from. Beauty and the Beast. I tell her all the time, our theme song's Beauty and the Beast. I don't care. Okay, I win. Okay, how can we cultivate, and she lost. How can we, you know, reincarnation and karma, she did something bad in a previous life, I tell her. Okay. How can we cultivate an atmosphere of confidence among staff to further encourage truth talk?
Okay, that's a really big question, because a lot of people are afraid, if I tell the truth, I'm going to get fired or whatever. And I think it starts with, it's hard to do when the point leader is not doing it.
It's almost impossible. Nobody feels safe.
No. So if we don't, if those who aren't the point leaders, if you don't model it, asking for feedback and taking feedback, then you'll probably train your organization not to tell the truth.
Okay? That's exactly right. That cannot trickle up.
Yeah, I don't know how that trickles up. And so, like, one of the things both of us do that we feel like is most helpful to us, and the byproduct is helpful to our organization, is we have feedback after we give our first talk. So Andy has a team of people that comes in and says, you know, that story was probably too long, or, you know, they'll do that with me, that joke was stupid or whatever. And, you know, you had a really good point and you moved past it and didn't give us time to absorb it. And so we have a team that comes in and gives us feedback on our message. Our whole staff and team knows this. And so, number one, it helps us get better. Number two, it says to the whole team, the thing that is most important to us, we're actually asking for feedback on. That creates a climate where people think, well, if Andy can take that kind of feedback and he wants it, then maybe I can give it to someone else. So we have to set that tone, or it's not likely to happen.
Right. You have to be willing to be wrong in meetings. You have to be willing to say, hey, that was a better idea. You just, and everybody wins. And again, when you find yourself hedging or pushing back, that's when you have to go look in the mirror and go, okay, what's wrong with me? Why I have become the lid to this team and to this organization. But that's tough.
I like Laura's question about volunteers, but I know our time is running short.
No, this is a really big, we're fine.
You want to do this one?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll just keep going into the red. So Laura asked, what are some practical things you can do to build up your leaders, I know, in your organization? How can I take the lid off my volunteers so they're empowered and encouraged? That's a great question.
Yep.
I'm starting to think different about the word volunteer. I don't want to be a volunteer, I want to be a leader. So we're starting to try to say this, that we don't recruit volunteers, we release leaders. Because volunteers do good things, but leaders change the world. Okay? So I don't want to volunteer. I'm like, my time's too valuable for that. I want to be a leader, I want to make a difference. So I'm trying to change the language from volunteers to servants. And leaders in our culture. I think I want to start there with language, because I think it matters. And so I'm just processing it. This is what I'm working on right now. And then I want to have a massive appreciation culture for those servants and leaders, meaning I want them to know what they do is valuable. I want to give them freedom to create. If they're just doing menial tasks, then they don't feel valued. I don't want a CEO of a company coming in and just handing out a bulletin and that's your ministry. I want them coming in and creating and bringing value. So I'm kind of mumbling.
Language is super important. We call our strategic service teams. These are strategic things. This is strategic service. It's not just volunteering. You're on a strategic service team. We could not function without this team. You're on a strategic service team. And here's something, and you know this, but this may help you take a step. When you ask for volunteers from the platform to your general audience, the same type of person responds to that.
Right.
Volunteers respond to that. People who are like, oh yeah, I want to help, or oh, I feel sorry for, or oh, the church is going to fall apart if I don't do this. Your key people are people you ask specific, and you make a specific ask. You say, we have an opportunity in our middle school ministry on Sunday mornings at 9:00, and I need somebody who's got who can do what I think you can do, would you please do this during this school year? This isn't forever. Nobody has time for open-ended volunteering. Nobody has time for open-ended leadership. I have a specific thing to do. It's strategic, and would you be willing to do this for next school year? So specific, short-term, one-on-one is way better. In other words, if you think about the person, it's like, man, I would love it if she would or he would. Then you need to ask she and he and not just pray that when you mention it Sunday morning, they respond and then they're not even there that Sunday. So specific, you got to do the general. I mean, we do the general, but that specific ask for that specific slot.
Yeah, and then for me, I was always trying to get them to do something to forward my mission or do something that was important to me rather than saying, I want to help you find what fulfills you. And if I'm really trying to engage them and using their gifts in a way that brings them fulfillment, it changes the motivation and the ask. And I think that matters. I want you to use your gifts so you're fulfilled in making a difference in our church rather than I want you to get done something that's important to me. So when my mindset is a little bit different, it helps me to be others-centered rather than self-centered. Then I'm not recruiting volunteers for me. I'm releasing leaders for the glory of God. And I think all those things matter. So,
and you could, one day you may be Stephen, be stoned.
That's one thing.
You can use that.
Yeah.
All right.